the trees, firing at the villagers and setting their hair on fire. His father went to run forward, his blue lightsaber raised, but his mother caught his arm.
"Kanto,"
she said, in a soft but firm voice.
"You know I'm right."
His anguish was plain to see, even for a very young child. When he sagged, something broke inside him.
"You always are, my love."
They embraced quickly, and then she ran toward the lizards, shouting a battle cry. Her son cried out too, wondering where she was going. But his father scooped him up and began running for the trees.
"Don't worry, son,"
he said as they escaped. "I'll keep you safe. And when she comes back, we'll make a new home. Somewhere safe and special, I promise you." Behind them, the lizards cried out in surprise and pain. He tried to look, but his father held on too tightly. And when the trees enfolded them, the sound of his mother fighting became muffled and indistinct. Slowly, over the course of many years, it faded into silence. Starkiller's eyes jerked open. Where was he? All was dark around him. He smelled smoke, and his body felt as though it had been hit by an asteroid. The last thing he remembered was tightening the force shield around him and destroying the Salvation so it wouldn't kill Juno. He was somewhere on Kamino then, but his mind remained full of strange images and feelings that he had never experienced before. Kashyyyk. Trandoshan slavers. His parents. He tried to shrug them off. They'd been dead for a long time, and the living mattered more. But he was struck by this brief glimpse of the woman who had given birth to him. Tall, with short brown hair, and a physique honed by years of training, she too had been a Jedi Knight, like her husband. She had been a warrior, and yet she had loved her son as well. She had loved him, and most likely died defending him and the Wookiees they'd befriended. And until this moment, he'd never known she existed, or that his father had made a promise he couldn't keep. Where had the memory come from? It didn't matter. She didn't matter. Starkiller had to get moving, or the promise he had made to himself would also go unfulfilled. For Juno. He reached for his comlink, but it was gone. Lost during the fall, presumably. He sat up and felt around him, seeking the dimensions of the space he found himself in. It was a deep stone pit, and for a moment he feared that he was back in the training rooms Vader had confined him to ever since his reawakening. But then he found a doorway, not far from the pile of rubble he had brought down with him. Somewhere far above, he was sure, was the hole he had made when he had hit the facility. There was no way of telling now just how far he had tumbled, burning and smoking like a meteor. He wrenched the door off its hinges. Outside was marginally lighter. A corridor led off into the distance. He loped along it, concentrating on faint sounds of fighting in the distance. Numerous varieties of weapons were in play, and several starfighters screamed overhead. That meant the shields were safely down, and the rebel forces were making their way into the facility. He allowed himself a small feeling of satisfaction, even though he knew the battle was far from won. The Imperials were well entrenched on Kamino. They wouldn't go down without a fight. The corridor led to a darkened command room. He flicked a switch and its blast shields opened, letting in the cool gray light of the outside world. Details assaulted him, too many at once. The first thing he needed to do was work out where he was. To his right were the cloning spires where he had seen Juno, now protected behind a clear curved dome. They were too smoke-blackened to make out if she was still there. A thick column of steam rose up from the shield generators, forming a spreading mushroom cloud, high above the facility. Fighters on both sides dodged and weaved around the cloud, while higher up, capital ships vied for ascendancy. Closer at hand, he made out flashpoints of engagement, where rebel forces were trying to penetrate, the high security dome around Darth Vader's restricted area. They were coming under heavy fire from all directions. Troop carriers descended under close escort to provide reinforcements, but for every one that landed, two were diverted or destroyed. Bombing runs softened up the Imperial defenses, which had both the advantage and disadvantage of being relatively fixed. TIE bombers returned the favor, attempting to blow the rebels to pieces whenever they stopped moving too long. Cannon emplacements strafed any rebel ships that came too close in their attempt to penetrate the dome, while AT-STs patrolled the perimeter, constantly vigilant. Starkiller needed to get through the same defenses as the rebels in order to save Juno. He scanned the controls in front of him, looking for maps or hidden routes that he could access. There were maintenance hatches spaced irregularly around the base of the dome, but he didn't have the codes required to open them. He didn't let that bother him. There were alternatives to codes. Picking the closest hangar hatch, he memorized the way there, activated his lightsabers, and left the control room. The memory of Kashyyyk stayed with him as he fought his way through the Imperials, occasionally dodging the odd rebel who thought he was on the Imperial side. He didn't know the location of his birthplace, and knowing now that both his parents were Jedi made it even more difficult to guess. Their relationship would have been forbidden by the Jedi Council, and then endangered even further by Order 66, and the subsequent slaughter of all their kind. How they had stayed hidden was unknown. Somehow, they'd ended up on Kashyyyk, where an attack by Trandoshan slavers had forced the two of them to come out of hiding. It was this, probably, that had brought Darth Vader to the planet, in search of Starkiller's surviving father. The death of his mother was now his earliest memory. And was it really his? That, too, he had no way of knowing. If Vader was telling the truth, his true birthplace lay ahead, under the high security dome, and the memory of Kashyyyk belonged to another man. He reached the maintenance hatch and cut his way through it. A stormtrooper armed with a flamethrower tried to roast him once he was inside, but a solid force push threw him back into his squad mates, where his fuel tank exploded. Starkiller took a moment to bring down the ceiling over the hatch so no one could follow him, then crawled on hands and knees into the secure facility. He kicked out the vent on the far end of the tunnel and dropped onto a walkway that followed the base of the dome. Inside the dome, the battle was even more difficult for the rebels. They had no air support and only a handful of limited access points. Several TIE fighters patrolled from above, ready to rain fire on anyone unauthorized. The rebels desperately needed a way to get their own fighters into play. Starkiller ducked as shots from a weapon lanced out at him from the far side of the dome. Snipers. He ran along the walkway to his right in order to present a moving target, speeding up and slowing down to make getting a bead even more difficult. There was no sign of Darth Vader, and Starkiller was too far away to see if Juno was on top of the cloning spires. Down among the rebel fighters, though, he spotted a familiar white topknot. Coda was fighting his way toward a command center, accompanied by the members of his squad. But sniper fire was making their progress slow. Starkiller looked up and waited for the muzzle flashes. The snipers Harry and Coda were situated in a tower not far away, within reach of the walkway he was following. He ran faster and leapt when he was at the closest point to the tower. For a moment he was in free fall, and then he hit the side of the tower with lightsabers pointing forward. They arrested his downward slide just above an observation window, which he shattered with a quick force push. Swinging himself down and through the window, he made his way to the nearest stairwell before any of the snipers could turn their high-powered weapons inward. He burst in the door on the uppermost level and found himself at the center of a web of concentrated blaster fire. Each of the snipers was armed with at least one non-specialist weapon, and they had all abandoned their harrowing of Coda in order to deal with him. His lightsabers swung like propellers, reflecting every shot back to their source. The air filled with smoke and cries, until finally the last sniper fell, slumped over his weapon. Just in case another team of Imperials came to reactivate the emplacement, Starkiller ran his blades through each of the sniper weapons, rendering them useless. Then he left the room and went up onto the roof. A passing TIE took a pot shot at him, but he jumped before the bolts could hit him. The top of the tower exploded into flame as he dropped in a carefully controlled fall to where Coda and his squad stood below. They were hunkered down at the entrance to the command center. Coda had his blade deep in the armored door, while one of his militia tried to slice through its lock. Both succeeded at the same time, and the squad burst inside, with Starkiller hot on their heels. They made short work of the Imperial officers within, and immediately took control of the consoles they found. "Get those hangar doors open!" Coda ordered. "Quickly!" He turned to Starkiller. "Vader's TIE fighters are going to keep us pinned down here until we get air support. Good to see you too, General. I knew you'd be back." His attention was directed through the curved window and the facility outside, as though he could see without the slightest impediment. "I'm just surprised it took you so long to catch up. I need to get to the cloning towers. We'll be quick. They'll be coming down around your ears once we get through the dome." A close strike from one of the TIE bombers made the command center shake. "Time's running out," Coda growled at one of the rebels, furiously tapping at his console. "I almost have control of the hangar doors," was the response. "Just give me one mo-" A second blast tore one corner of the roof away, taking the rebel technician with it. Coda cursed and led the dash forward, out of the center, and back onto the walkways. "I'll deal with the hangar doors," Starkiller told him as they dodged fire from snipers and cannon emplacements on all sides. "You just give me time to get Juno before you take everything out." Coda didn't argue.
"Good, good.
We'll find the security hub and try to prevent any more lockdowns." They split up at the next intersection, and Starkiller leapt from ledge to ledge toward another command center near the base of the dome. Behind it was the nearest hangar entrance, and its thick Duracell doors were tightly sealed against the rebels outside. The Imperials inside the command center saw him coming and took steps to prepare. By the time he had burned his way in, the controls were locked, and when he tried to interfere with them, they self-destructed. There went that plan. But it wasn't the only one he had. Leaving the ruined command center behind, he leapt to the base of the hangar door and, facing it, spread his arms wide, palms forward. "For Juno," he thought, and pushed. The hangar doors shook in their tracks, but didn't give. He stepped back, changed his stance, and tried pulling instead. Again, nothing. A sniper had taken a bead on him. He took a moment to deflect the shot, very precisely, back to the other side of the dome. The resulting explosion seemed tiny from such a great distance, but had the desired effect. No more shots came his way. Starkiller turned back to the doors and extended his widespread fingers to the stubborn metal. Waves of intense electrical purge surged into the doors, shorting out systems both physical and electromagnetic. He gave them a good 20 seconds before stepping back and trying to pull again. This time the doors responded as they were supposed to. With a shriek of complaint, the metal buckled and curved inward, allowing access to the outside. When the doors were protruding vertically from the wall, he pushed each side back so it was flush. Barely had he finished when the first rebel Y-Wing swept by, saw the opening, then came around to rush through. It roared past him, a wave of exhaust hot in its wake. The pilot took in the situation and began firing at the TIE fighters, pestering Coda, turning the fight a little more in the rebels' favor. Starkiller felt that he'd discharged his responsibility to Coda. It was time now to go for Juno, but the spires were on the other side of the dome, and the lower levels were crawling with AT-STs and stormtroopers. Seeking the best shortcut available, he climbed to the top of the ruined hangar door and waited for the next starfighter to come through. Two TIE fighters followed the Y-Wing, then a headhunter. He let them go unmolested. There were insufficient handholds on the top of either model's canopy. The fifth was a Y-wing, exactly what he was after. As it rushed through the open hangar entrance, he jumped onto it and caught the R2 unit protruding from its exposed chassis tightly about the domed head. The impact nearly tore his arms off at the shoulders, and the Y-wing dipped sharply under the unexpected weight. The droid squawked in alarm, prompting a barrel roll from the starfighter's pilot. Starkiller hung on tightly as the world turned around him. "Tell the pilot I'm on your side!" he shouted over the roaring of the Y-wing's twin ion jet engines. The starfighter banked to avoid the fire-blackened tower, where Starkiller had dealt with the snipers. Then it leveled out.
"You're not doing any damage back there,"
crackled a voice from the R2's vocoder.
"So I guess you really aren't an imp. But what are you doing? Do you have a death wish or something?"
"I hope not," Starkiller thought. "I need a ride. See those spires over to starboard? That's where I have to go."
"Where the firepower's heaviest?"
"If you're not up to it, I'll find myself another ride." The pilot laughed.
"No one's ever called Wedge Antilles a coward. Hold tight, and we'll see what this wishbone can do."
The Y-wing began to curve around the inside of the dome, dodging fire from turbolasers and TIE fighters. Starkiller braced himself with both feet and one hand gripping a manipulator extended by the R2 unit. With his free arm, he supplemented the starfighter's energy shields with one lightsaber, bouncing laser blasts up into the dome and force-pushing ion torpedoes away. At first, it looked as though getting to the spires would be easy. But the more the number of ships under the dome increased, the harder it became to fly in a straight line. After a tense dogfight with two TIEs flying in tandem, which ended with them colliding, thanks to some deft flying from Antilles, the Y-wing rushed the spires head-on, but was driven back by fire, too concentrated to fly through.
"Okay, now what?"
asked Antilles as he swept them smoothly out of range. Starkiller thought for a second.
"That depends on what kind of odds you like." "I make my own odds."
"Good. Go down."
"What? We can't go down.
There's an opportunity. The facility sits on platforms over the ocean. Find a gap in the platform and you can get under it. Then it's just a matter of finding a way back up near the spire, see?"
"All I can see is my life flashing before my eyes."
The pilot laughed again.
"But that's okay. I always skip the boring bits. Get ready. Here we go."
The Y-wing's nose suddenly dropped. The R2 unit wailed. Starkiller held on with both hands as the rooftops of the facility rushed up at him. The terrified exhilaration he felt was more intense than when he had surfed the Salvation down onto Kamino. He was a passenger now, trusting entirely in the flying abilities of a pilot he'd never met. The chances were he'd misjudge the insertion into the infrastructure and kill both of them. But it was too late to bail now. They were committed. The Y-wing sped down a gap between two buildings, dodging bridges and walkways. At first, Starkiller saw no gap through the rapidly approaching lower levels, but then he caught a gleam of light on wave tops through a square hole. Antilles must have spied it by radar from above. It looked very small, barely wide enough to fit the widely spaced twin ion engines, even on the diagonal.
"Keep an eye on that eyeball for me, will you?"
Starkiller looked behind him. A TIE fighter had their tail and fired twice, just missing their port engine. Starkiller didn't know what Antilles expected him to do about it. He couldn't let go, not with a sudden course change just seconds ahead. All he could do was hope the rear deflector shields would last long enough. The hole rushed for them. The pilot jockeyed the Y-wing from side to side, adjusting its trim by minute degrees. Then suddenly, they were through. and Starkiller was wrenched to his right by the violent Delta V. His legs were swept out from under him, leaving him hanging by his fingertips from the R2 unit. The ion rockets roared. A mist of flash-boiled seawater sprayed him. He swung back and forth violently before the Y-Wing found horizontal again and sped off, ducking and weaving around the facility's many deep-sea supports. Behind them, the TIE fighter clipped the edge of the hole and exploded with a flash of yellow light against the surface of the sea. Starkiller's knees touched the back of the Y-Wing and gratefully took some of the pressure off his hands. It was dark under the facility, apart from the odd shaft shining down through the lower levels and a distant glimmer shining past its outer edges. "Good flying," he said breathlessly.
"You're still there? That's a relief. D6 has gone quiet. I think he's in shock."
The R2 unit made a mournful sound.
"Just hold on a minute longer,"
Antilles told it.
"Then we'll get back to shooting bucketheads."
The Y-Wing curved gracefully around a trio of heavy-set columns supporting something weighty above them.
"If my guess is right, and it always is, we're coming up on the spires now. All we need is a way in."
"No need to be subtle about it,"
Starkiller told him, shifting position to see more clearly over the canopy.
"What about up there, near that access ladder?"
"Set. Get ready for some more G's, whoever you are."
The Y-Wing surged forward, laser cannon firing in a steady stream. Hot gas and molten metal exploded from the impact site. A new shaft of light beamed through the hole Antilles had made in the lower levels. He hit the retros and swung his starfighter in a complicated maneuver that left it tail down and nose up, directly under the hole. Both ion engines roared, and they shot upward through what might have been a garbage chute, back into the secure facility. They emerged in the midst of the cloning spires. Turbo laser emplacements instantly spotted them and began firing. Multiple flashes indicated hits of the Y-Wing shields. Almost immediately, Antilles grew concerned.
"I can take this heat, but not for long. Where do you want me to put you down?"
Starkiller tried to get his bearings, but he had lost them under the facility. His instincts told him that Juno was ahead, and he hoped they spoke truly.
"Keep on as you are. No need to slow down."
"You're not going to jump again, are you?"
Wedge Antilles' voice was swept away as Starkiller launched himself off the back of the Y-Wing and into space. The side of the nearest spire rushed toward him, and he lit his lightsabers an instant before striking the glass wall. He landed in a shower of glass shards, rolled, and stood unscathed. The Y-Wing swooped back to check he was okay, and Starkiller waved his lightsaber blade in thanks. The stubby craft acknowledged him by dipping its nose, then roared away. He was alone. Splinters of glass crunched softly underfoot as he jogged to the end of the corridor in which he'd landed. Alarms vied with the sound of explosions and starfighter engines for dominance, creating a dissonant racket all around him. He heard no footsteps or voices. If there had ever been Kaminoan technicians in this area of the spire, they had almost certainly been evacuated now. He passed through an open doorway and passed into the heart of the spire itself. He stood in the entrance for a moment, eyes tracking upward along a seemingly endless series of cloning tanks, affixed to platforms barely wide enough for droids and technicians to gain access. Stormtroopers patrolled the tanks, but Starkiller didn't think they were specifically stationed to watch for him. More likely, they were guarding the beings who would one day swell their own ranks. For these were ordinary stormtrooper clones, nothing experimental or sinister. And as such, they were a valid target for an attack by the Rebel Alliance. Starkiller had his sights set much higher. He was sure now that he had the right spire. He could sense both Juno and Darth Vader in the cavernous spaces above him. It was just a matter of getting to them. But if he could sense Vader, then the Dark Lord could sense him in return. And that made the game that much more complicated. The stormtroopers in the cloning tower were too dispersed to take on all at once. Instead, and in order to confuse the trail he would inevitably leave in his wake, he chose a very different strategy. Once, he'd been paralyzed and abandoned in a trench full of blood wolves, with no way to reach safety except by using the power of his own mind. It was a lesson Darth Vader had made sure his apprentice learned before even beginning combat training. Killing enemies wasn't the same thing as controlling them. Each method had its uses, but they weren't interchangeable. Running lightly around the base of the tower, he approached the first clutch of sentries from behind. A judicious use of telekinesis triggered a life support alarm a dozen clone tubes long, prompting a quick inspection by the stormtroopers. While they were distracted, he ran up the stairs they'd been guarding to the next platform. There he put the thought into the mind of another trooper that he had heard a disturbance some distance away. The moment he and his fellows were busy, Starkiller crept past them too. The Force absorbed all sound of his movement and shrouded his form in shadow. He didn't just fade into the background. He became the background. Before long, though, the guards became suspicious. They were, of course, in constant contact via their helmet comlinks, and a plethora of false alarms was itself unlikely to be innocent. So Starkiller turned the screws a little tighter, creating half-seen phantoms in the minds of the troopers that literally ran circles around them. Pressure hoses exploded with the force of grenades when Starkiller blocked them from afar. Clone tubes opened unexpectedly, spilling disoriented, half-minded bodies across the decks. By the time he had reached the summit of that tower, the stormtroopers were in utter disarray, and he hadn't used his lightsabers once. Satisfied, he entered a narrow junction between that cloning tower and the one above it. There he met his first real opposition. Camouflaged troopers guarded a bottleneck between the towers. On seeing him, they opened fire immediately. He shocked their armor back into opacity and quickly dealt with them. But the damage had been done. Troopers above and below the junction knew he was there, and they converged on his location en masse. He fought his way into the second tower against the steady rain of blaster fire, while at the same time defending his back. He buckled lofty platforms, tipping stormtroopers to their deaths far below. He used cloning tubes as flying bombs, turning the floor underfoot slick with spilled amniotic fluids. He peeled plates from the walls and sent them flying into clutches of stormtroopers, too time-consuming to confront head-on. Ruination surrounded him. More death, he thought. Even when he tried, the curse of Darth Vader's training lay heavily upon him. Was this the way it would always be? Would he never shake off that fatal legacy? Or was there another way to resist that he hadn't found yet? Great mastery of the Force had to lead to more than just the increased capacity for violence. Or else, every Jedi would be a Sith, and the Galactic Civil War would never have happened. Again, he thought of the first time the original Starkiller had faced his master in a duel. If Vader had been a Jedi, what kind of Jedi had he been? A hero or a failure? Starkiller had a hard time believing that such great evil could have come out of indifference or inability. But at the same time, he could barely credit that someone with such natural talent could have gone unnoticed, as his own had not. Perhaps the young Darth Vader had been kept secret too. Perhaps the mask was a matter of habit, rather than necessity. Starkiller reached the top of the second tower unscathed. An open turbolift awaited him there. He faced it for a moment, not knowing where it would take him, but sensing it was somewhere he had to go. Whatever awaited him at the other end, he needed to face it. He supposed his mother had felt this way in Kashyyyk, while fending off the Trandoshan slavers who threatened her family. She, too, had had no choice, but still she had fought, for something greater than her own survival, for love. Her legacy was a powerful one, and Darth Vader had never entirely managed to expunge it from the boy who would be his apprentice, or even a clone of that boy. He stepped into the turbolift. The doors closed, and he was taken upward. He readied himself for what was to come, both physically, with lightsabers raised and ready, and emotionally, inasmuch as that was possible. The cab slowed, stopped, the doors slid open. The space beyond was gloomy and vast. Starkiller emerged slowly from the lift, keeping all his senses peeled. Darth Vader was close, very close. In the shadows above, he made out the faint outlines of platforms, much like the ones in the cloning towers below. Beyond them, faint light gleamed on curved glass tubes, but he could not make out what lay within. The skin of his arms prickled. Something was very close. Very close indeed.
"Whatever you seek, only inside you will find."
The words of the wise little creature he had met on Dagobah reassured him oddly.
"A part of yourself, perhaps?"
The sound of another lightsaber echoed off the metal and glass surfaces around him.
"You have returned."
Starkiller looked around. He couldn't pinpoint the origin of his former master's voice. "As you see," he said, moving slowly forward in a confident but wary stance.
"It was only a matter of time."
"Where is Juno?" he asked. The last he had seen of her, she'd been on the roof of the spire. She could have been moved anywhere since then. A dark figure lunged at him from the shadows. Starkiller blocked a powerful slash to his head and retaliated with a double sweep to Darth Vader's legs. The Dark Lord leapt upward, out of reach of his weapons, and Starkiller followed. When he landed on the first platform, Darth Vader was nowhere to be seen. Something moved to his right. He spun to face it, lightsabers upraised. A slender form stepped out of the shadows. "I knew you'd come," said Juno, smiling. "At last, we are together again." Almost, he lowered his weapons. It was her. She held out her arms to embrace him. He longed to run to her, but an instinct told him something was wrong. A flash of memory, a memory of a vision, came to him. He had seen a vision of Juno on the Bridge of the Salvation when the bounty hunter had captured her. Everything about that vision had come true, right down to the last detail. Proxy had been taken out, along with her canid second-in-command. She herself had been shot in the shoulder. This Juno was uninjured. "Stay back," he said, tightening his defenses. Juno's smile faded. Her arms came down. When she moved, she did so with a speed that wasn't human, reaching behind her back with both hands to produce two Q2 holdout blasters. With blank-faced, depersonalized lethality, she came for him, firing both blasters at once. Starkiller deflected the shots right back at her, and she staggered backward with a cry. Then he was on her, bisecting her abdomen with his left lightsaber and taking her head off at the neck with his right. As the body fell in pieces to the metal floor, showering sparks, Starkiller stood over her, breathing heavily. The illusion died, revealing the wreckage of a proxy droid at his feet. "It's a lot easier to fight the Empire when it's faceless," he heard her say from the past, "when the people whose lives are ending are hidden behind stormtrooper helmets or durasteel hulls. But when they're people we knew, people like we used to be. He spun, catching the faintest echo of an indrawn, artificial breath from behind him, and caught Darth Vader's lightsaber on the downstroke. They stood that way, locked, blade to blade, for a moment, and then Starkiller pushed the Dark Lord back. He swept one lightsaber on a rising arc that would have taken off Darth Vader's left arm, while the other he flipped sideways, hoping to catch his opponent in the chest unit. Vader blocked both blows, then leapt a second time, the next platform up. How much harder is it going to get? Starkiller scowled. Are you having second thoughts? He'd asked Juno that same day, the day after he'd seen the vision of his father on Kashyyyk. Her answer had been immediate. No. But he'd sensed an uneasiness within her, just as his former master had sensed uneasiness within him shortly afterward. Their loyalties were being tested. Principles, too. Such testing was never easy. Darth Vader was playing a very obvious game now. Starkiller could see it, and he would not be deflected from his course. He jumped to the second level, and there came face to face with Bail Organa, then Coda, then Mon Mothma, then Garmbel Iblis. When all the leaders of the Rebel Alliance lay dead at his feet, their droid bodies exposed beneath treacherous holograms, Darth Vader attacked again. His blows were swift and economical, and the threat no less than it had ever been. But Starkiller sensed more was to come. Darth Vader would kill him, yes, without hesitation. But he would rather turn him first. On the fourth level, he came face to face with his own father, and struck him down without hesitation. Dreams and memories had no power over him anymore. He spun to face the attack he'd come to expect from the real Darth Vader, full of confidence and surety. The Dark Lord fell back under his blows, and this time, when he leapt for safety, Starkiller telekinetically pulled him back down. His former master sprawled before him, lightsaber raised defensively. He slashed the hand holding it away, and then plunged his second lightsaber deep into his chest. With a gasping, wheezing moan, Darth Vader fell back and dissolved into another proxy droid. Unsurprised, Starkiller stepped back and looked around for the real Darth Vader. He could see or hear nothing, but his senses tingled with an acute and insistent message. Above him. He somersaulted upward and landed in a crouch, ready for anything.
You are confident. That will be your downfall.
The Dark Lord was standing out of Starkiller's reach. Instead of attacking, he gestured at the rows of cloning tanks beside him. Lights flickered on inside them, revealing row after row of identical forms, clad in a stripped-down version of his former training suit, and attached via tubes to complex feeders and breathers. They hung weightlessly in transparent fluid, twitching occasionally in their sleep. Starkiller felt a shock of recognition jolt through him. These weren't stormtroopers. They were him. Incomplete and oddly warped from true, but definitely him. Vader gestured again, and the clone's eyes opened. In them, Starkiller saw nothing but hatred, anger, confusion, betrayal, madness, and loss. Their glass cages shattered. Amniotic fluid boiled away. They pulled free from their cables and tubes, and with motions faltering at first, but quickly growing stronger, climbed free from the wreckage. Starkiller stood his ground as a circle of failed clones formed around him. Behind them, Darth Vader nodded once. The clones came forward in one overwhelming rush. Chapter 22. Juno hung painfully in her shackles, doing her best to follow the fight unfolding around her, although she could see little of it directly. Sometimes she closed her eyes to let her ears do the work. There was a music to the explosions and weapons fire that played out in waves and bursts all around her. Thus far, none of it had impacted directly upon her, but she could feel it coming steadily closer. After the crash and disintegration of the Salvation, a dome had closed above her, sealing this section of the facility behind a secure bubble. Outside, rebel and imperial forces had raged hard. Dogfights and furious standoffs between capital vessels lit up the cloudy skies of Kamino, with the occasional capitulation shining like a sun over the battlefield, albeit briefly. It was hard to determine who was winning, partly because of the clouds. She didn't know how many ships were engaging in orbit, or how many the Emperor and Alliance commanders were holding in reserve. What she saw could be the entirety of the conflict, or the merest hint of it. At one point, through the dome, she thought she saw the unique outline of the rogue shadow behind the cloak protecting it from enemy gunners' eyes. Her heart leapt. If it was here, then Coda was here too. Then it disappeared behind a building, just outside the bubble protecting her from the rain. Moments later, she heard the sounds of a concentrated assault on the bubble's walls. Not long after that, the gunfire came from below, within the bubble itself, and she knew the fight was definitely coming her way. She strained against the shackles, wishing she had some way, any way at all, to join the battle. Her four guards were growing restless, probably feeling the same. TIE fighters circled the interior of the bubble, with engines screaming. The fight had stalled while Coda's ground forces faced off against the aerial defenses. But before long, the balance shifted again. Someone got a hangar door open, allowing rebel forces access at last. Dogfights played out around her, and for the first time it occurred to her that if the facility as a whole was the target, then she herself might not be safe. That was a sobering thought. What if her presence was unknown? Or worse, completely irrelevant to the attacking forces? She would be collateral damage if the cloning towers fell, and there was nothing she could do about it. Starkiller was her only hope. If anyone could get to her in time, it would be him. Rebel starfighters buzzed the towers, but none of them attacked yet. They were busy with the TIEs and the cannon emplacements. A series of large explosions suggested that Coda's new squad was attacking the dome itself, hoping to expose the facility to the superior firepower outside. When they managed that, she supposed, that would spell the end for her. Not even Starkiller could fend off a concentrated assault from above. "I don't know about you," she told her guards, "but I feel like a sitting Minock out here." They didn't respond. But again, she could tell they sympathized. When warning klaxons began to sound in the spire below her, their uneasiness redoubled. "There goes your exit strategy," she said. "Bet you wish you'd slept in this morning." Faintly through her helmets, she heard the sound of the stormtroopers talking to one another over their comlinks, maybe discussing the value in shooting her and making a run for it, although she doubted any of them would risk incurring Vader's wrath. Even with such rebel firepower arrayed against them, they would regard the Dark Lord as the greatest threat. She remembered feeling that way once. Something exploded in spire, making it sway underfoot. Juno felt breathless, as though the air were growing thinner. It was him. She was certain of it. The stormtroopers knew it too. They tightened around her, drawing a false sense of security from closer proximity to one another. They looked at her and glanced quickly away, looking more nervous than ever, and she realized only then that she was smiling. He was so close to her. The spire shook again, more violently than before. She wondered where Darth Vader was and what he was doing. Surely he wouldn't have brought her to Kamino, only to leave her dangling in the trap, unless... It had sprung already, and she was no longer needed. But in that case, why didn't the troopers just shoot her and be done with it? She didn't understand the finer details of Vader's plan. That was her only uncertainty. 7 powerful explosions filled the interior of the dome. With a piercing, splitting sound, the dome itself began to shatter. Cracks spread across the transparasteel, fissures dozens of meters long that joined one another and branched to create entirely new ones. They reached up from its base and converged on the center high above, where they met. Gently, in slow motion, the first pieces began to fall. Each was larger than a starfighter, and easily as heavy. They turned as they fell, tumbling with ponderous grace. When the first piece hit the buildings below, it shattered into a million pieces. And, from the interior of the spire, came a terrible scream, as of 100 voices at once, crying out in despair. Chapter 23. Starkiller fought as he had never fought before. Clones. His clones. Nightmarishly imperfect, but powerful all the same, pressed in on all sides. Darth Vader's vile conditioning had a profound hold on their immature psychologies. The desire to kill consumed their thoughts. It was all they radiated. Together, they could easily have turned on their creator and overpowered him. Instead, they were driven to destroy their own. Not their own. Just him. Whether he was the original Starkiller, as Coda believed, or simply the best copy to date, didn't matter. He was their target, and they used every power they possessed to bring him down. On Kashyyyk, he had fought a vision of himself and won. On Dagobah, he had seen other versions of him and spared them. On Kamino, the choice was taken from him. He had to fight if he was to live, and he had to live in order to save Juno. Thought didn't enter into it. The Force rushed through him, and his lightsabers moved as though of their own accord. His clones screamed as he cut them down. It quickly became apparent that the first to rush in were the wildest and weakest both. In their eagerness to do battle, they didn't stop to plan their strategies. What they possessed in speed, they lacked in forethought. He was armed, and they were not. So for being headstrong beyond all reason, these brutish beings paid the ultimate price. The next wave either learned from the fate of the first, or had enough innate caution to stand back a moment and observe the way he fought. They came at him from all sides, using telekinesis to try to knock him off balance on the blood-slicked floor. He was too fast for them, leaping over their heads and attacking from behind, slashing at their overdeveloped shoulders and hunched backs without remorse. Moving out of the center of the ring of converging clones brought him into contact with the third wave, the most cunning he'd encountered so far. Long-armed and long-fingered, with blackened, blistering skin, these employed lightning when attacking him, and then by devious means. They would wait until he was distracted and attack him from behind, or come at him from three directions at once, or even use one of their fellow clones as an impromptu conductor. Deadly currents crackled and sparkled around him, kept barely at bay by the judicious application of a force shield. Sometimes a lucky strike caused him pain, but he fought through it, found the source, and put the attack quickly to an end. From above came the sound of lightsabers activating, and he braced himself for another, more dangerous onslaught. These, the most normal-looking of all the clones, spun, slashed, hacked, and stabbed at him from all sides, one-handed, two-handed, with all possible variations of lightsaber combat styles. Red-eyed and hate-filled, they fought each other too, and the ones who had come before. There were no allies, just a sea of individuals. And yet, confidence, determination, intelligence, and cunning, combined with physical strength and agility, the clones possessed every attribute he did, in greater or lesser degrees. He saw in their faces the same confusion he felt. They were all clones. So who was he to stand out from among them? What special qualities set him apart? Who was Starkiller in this mass of faces and bodies? A desperate rage built up inside him. What if what he felt was nothing but a lingering imprint left behind by the first Starkiller? Did he cling to his feelings with all the more desperation because deep down he knew they were counterfeit?
The memories of a dead man.
Vader had called them, blaming them for the torment and confusion he'd felt.
They will fade.
Vader had promised. But they had not. Did the other clones experience the same hopes and fears? Were their experiences any less worthy than his?
Destroy what he created. Hate what he loved. Be strong.
That was the command Vader had given him on threat of death. But who was the deliverer of that death? Wasn't he the one delivering to the clones the very fate that he had feared? Had they all been given the same ultimatum?
You will receive the same treatment as the others.
Death by lightsaber at his own hand. Perhaps this macabre free-for-all was Vader's way of weeding out the imperfect stock. The last one left standing would be considered the perfect Starkiller. The one who would take his place at Vader's side. Perhaps that was his plan.
You have faced your final test.
Vader had told a victorious version of himself in the vision he'd received on the Salvation. Maybe the vision he'd received on Dagobah had warned him of a very real trial. Not the metaphorical one he had imagined it to be. The dark side awaited his call. But if this was his final test, then he would not fail. There was too much riding on it. If he gave in to temptation and became Darth Vader's apprentice once more, then it was clear from the vision that Juno would die. She was the whole reason he had escaped, and then returned. He would not turn his back on that, even to survive. He sought strength from within himself, and pushed outward with all his might. Clones went flying. The empty tubes from which they'd emerged shattered into millions of pieces. Platforms buckled and fell with reverberant crashes. The interior of the cloning tower rang as though struck with a giant hammer. Every muscle in his body shook with the effort of it. The echoes faded, and he felt a peculiar kind of quiet descend. The air was misted red, and every surface was slick with blood. He tasted it on his tongue, and smelled it in his nose. His blood. A veritable ocean of it. He maintained a defensive pose, breathing rhythmically and deeply, regaining his strength. The tips of his lightsaber shook. He had never felt so exhausted at every level of his being. He felt simultaneously cleansed and poisoned. Nothing moved. Slowly, incredulously, he began to believe that it was over. They were all dead. He had destroyed every last one of them. He was the only one left, of the many Darth Vader had created, to do his bidding.
Why me?
He asked the silent cloning tower.
Search your feelings.
Vader said, stepping into view at the very top of the tower, lightsaber held tightly in his right hand.
The answer lies within you.
Starkiller stared up at his former master. What did he have that none of the other clones did? He remembered.
How long this time?
13 days. Impressive.
And he remembered. The Force gives me all I need.
The Force?
The dark side, I mean. Slowly, a dark understanding began to form. All the duels, all the tests, all the torturous mind games had been to ensure his survival against every opponent, bar one, his master. In a sense, they were still playing out the first time they'd faced each other in combat. He didn't remember the early days of his apprenticeship, when the memories of his parents had been strong, and the young boy he had once been resisted Vader's absolute authority. But he was sure the battle had been even then psychological. The battle would never cease until one of them won. Was this what it was like to be a Sith? Forever at war with one's own master? Your training made me strong enough to escape you, not obey you.
Yet, here you are.
Darth Vader's words fell on him like heavy weights.
My most deadly creation.
You lie!
Starkiller jumped up to the next platform, passion stirring him to action.
You never wanted this! You can't have! Once Juno has been rescued, your facility will be destroyed! You with it, if there's any justice!
There is no justice,
said Darth Vader, watching him ascend.
Only power.
Vader made no move to defend himself when Starkiller reached the very top of the cloning tower. Determined to prove him wrong, Starkiller didn't waste time announcing his intentions. He just lunged. Only at the very last moment did Vader raise his blade to block the blow, and even then, the move seemed almost casual, disinterested. Starkiller struck again with both lightsabers. Vader blocked one blade and used telekinesis to throw the other off target. The platform buckled and twisted, sending Starkiller flying. He rolled and leapt and came up swinging, covered in blood, the blood of his fellow clones, and knowing Juno was close, he fought his former master with single-minded focus. Vader was still testing him. He sensed that more and more keenly with every passing moment, but to what purpose, he still couldn't tell. Vader himself fought more cautiously than he had on the Death Star, the last time he had dueled in earnest. His armor seemed to have improved too. It was less vulnerable to lightning than it had been just days before. Vader threw wrecked platforms and cloning tubes at him, while he scored 3 slashes to the Dark Lord's cape in return. They circled the top of the cloning tower, striking and assessing, then striking again. Starkiller swore that he would not give in to anger or frustration. If that was what Darth Vader wanted, he wasn't going to get it. The only emotion he would give in to was love. Finally, Starkiller saw an opportunity. They were exchanging rapid blows along the edge of the buckled platform, blades swinging so fast they were visible only as blurs. Vader's defenses were impenetrable. His lightsaber seemed to arrive a split second before Starkiller's every time. He may have defeated Vader before, but Vader had learned from that mistake. He knew the measure of his former apprentice now, but the same was true in reverse. And when Vader forced Starkiller onto his back foot and raised his lightsaber to strike him down, Starkiller fired a lightning blast into the side of Vader's armor that was so concentrated, even the new installation couldn't absorb it. The Dark Lord stiffened, betrayed by his extensive prosthetics. The distraction lasted only a moment, but it was enough. Starkiller knocked his blade out of the way and moved in to strike. Juno lying limp in his arms. The vision struck him as powerfully as a physical blow. When he tried to push it aside, it returned with even more power. Juno dead. He reeled in shock. Was this what would happen if he killed Vader? He had no choice but to believe so. But if he didn't kill Vader, how would he ever get to her? The Dark Lord took advantage of his momentary confusion. He delivered a telekinetic shove that threw Starkiller backward off the platform and down to the lower levels of the ruined cloning tower. The blow and the fall had the welcome effect of clearing his mind. He turned in mid-air and landed on his feet. An instant later, he was leaping upward again, his face a mask of determination. Whatever happened to Juno, he saw no choice but to confront Darth Vader. The Dark Lord had killed his father, betrayed him at least once, and would kill Juno the very second she was of no more use to him. Their time of reckoning was long overdue. The attainment of his true mastery of the Force, the destiny Darth Vader so often threatened him with, could only come one way. He saw that now. His final test was to kill Vader himself. When he reached the top level, Vader was disappearing behind the doors of another turbo lift. Starkiller ripped them open, but the cab had already begun to ascend. He had no intention of waiting for it to return. He braced himself on the inside of the shaft and jumped. One powerful leap saw him rising almost as fast as the cab. He reached telekinetically for its underside and caught it. When the cab started to slow, he approached close enough to physically hold on to the underside and raised one lightsaber to cut his way through. The cab jerked to a halt. Vader was already gone by the time Starkiller emerged through a circular hole in the floor. Outside the cab wasn't another cloning tower. A short ramp led up to the roof of the spire itself, currently out of sight. Starkiller emerged from the cab, a tightness in his chest telling him that Juno was very close now. Very close indeed. She was exactly where he had last seen her. It was raining. The dome had been breached. All around him, the fight between the Rebels and Imperials waged on. Wrecked starfighters tumbled from the sky in flames. Debris gushed out of wounded frigates. A listing Star Destroyer vented air and bodies in huge quantities. Across the facility, dozens of dark columns of smoke formed a thick veil of carbonized ash, choking the air. A constant, high-frequency pulsation of energy weapons came from all around him, punctuated by the occasional base explosion. It was impossible to tell who was winning. Wary of an ambush, Starkiller walked up the ramp. As he did so, Darth Vader came into view. The Dark Lord stood with his lightsaber extinguished in the center of the roof. Behind him, partially obscured by their lord, were four stormtroopers with weapons held at the ready.
"Get out of my way," he said.
"Your memories betray you,"
Darth Vader said. "They make me who I am."
"You must turn your back on them in order to become who you will be."
Starkiller stopped in his tracks. Was that why Darth Vader burdened him with everything the original Starkiller had been? To demonstrate his strength and commitment by dismissing it, his former self with it? Or was there still some other motive that he couldn't discern? Of only one thing was he certain. He wouldn't turn his back on Juno for any incentive.
"Never,"
he said.
"Then she will die."
Darth Vader stepped aside, revealing Juno in shackles. He gestured, and the four stormtroopers surrounding her raised their weapons and fired as one. Chapter 24. When Darth Vader walked onto the roof, the stormtrooper stood to immediate attention. Juno straightened too, but not out of respect. She didn't know what was coming, but she swore she would be ready for it. The strange sounds coming from below, the screams and clash of lightsabers, had encouraged her to hope that it would be Starkiller who came to her first. But that was dashed now. If he was dead, then Vader would surely have no reason to keep her alive. Her guard's comlinks chattered too faintly for her to make out the words. Orders, she assumed, from the Dark Lord. They nodded and took new positions, two on either side of her. Then they all turned to face their master, and he turned his back on them. For a second, the world paused. The fighting around the spire seemed to lessen. Even the conflict in the sky grew still. She felt as though everyone in Kamino was looking in her direction, although surely she knew they didn't even see her. It was all about Vader and Starkiller, if the man she had loved was still alive. Footsteps came up the ramp. She strained against her bonds, but Vader was directly in her line of sight. She couldn't see past him. She could hear, though, and she would recognize his voice under any conditions, just like the rogue shadow. "Get out of my way," he said to Vader.
"Your memories betray you.
They make me who I am.
You must turn your back on them in order to become who you will be."
"Never." Vader stepped to one side, and past the swirling of his cloak, Juno saw him. Starkiller. And for an instant, she didn't see the blood all over him, or the tattered state of his flight uniform. All she saw was his eyes. And they, in turn, saw nothing but her.
"Then she will die,"
Vader said, raising one hand in a signal to her guards. They raised their weapons, took aim, and fired. It happened so fast she barely had time to flinch. Vader had been keeping her alive for so long now that it didn't seem entirely real that he would dispose of her so suddenly. She jerked forward as far as the shackles allowed her, straining to get away. Every muscle in her body tensed in readiness. The weapons' muzzles flashed. And at that very instant, a massive force struck her and the guards, flinging her backward so hard she thought her chains might break her wrists. The stormtroopers effectively disappeared, swept off the top of the spire in an instant. The shots they had fired all missed, deflected by the powerful force, although one burned her right cheek as it went by. The four energy bursts followed wild trajectories outward across the crowded sky. "Juno!" Her shackles fell to the ground with a heavy clatter. Alive, but winded, she couldn't reply. She could barely even believe she was alive. She had caught just the fringe of that push that had killed the guards. And she knew that even so, she had almost been killed herself. A different force gripped her. One no less powerful than the first, but aimed at her, not at anything else. It gripped her cruelly about the throat and lifted her so her feet barely touched the ground.
"Bow before me,"
said Vader to the man she loved. Starkiller took a step forward. The force gripped her even more tightly, closing her windpipe. She choked, kicking out and finding no ground at all beneath her now. Her hands pulled at her throat, but there was nothing there to grip, and no way to fight it. "Juno!" She heard the furious despair in Starkiller's voice and understood that he was fighting for her and losing.
"Bow before me,"
Vader repeated.
"Or she dies."
"Don't,"